In 2002, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, patented, and I quote, an infectious replication defective clone of coronavirus. Listen to those words, infectious replication defective. What does that phrase actually mean? Infectious replication defective means a weapon. It means something meant to target an individual, but not have collateral damage to other individuals. That's what infectious replication defective means. And that patent was filed in 2002 on work funded by NIAID's Anthony Fauci from 1999 to 2002. And that work, patented at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, mysteriously preceded SARS 1.0 by a year. Dave, are you suggesting that SARS 1.0 wasn't from a wet market in Wuhan? Are you suggesting it might have come from a laboratory in the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill? No, I'm not suggesting it. I'm telling you that's the facts. We engineered SARS. SARS is not a naturally occurring phenomenon. The naturally occurring phenomenon is called the common cold. It's called influenza-like illness. It's called gastroenteritis. That's the naturally occurring coronavirus. SARS is the research developed by humans weaponizing a life system model to actually attack human beings. And they patented it in 2002. And in 2003, giant surprise, the CDC filed the patent on coronavirus isolated from humans in violation, once again, of biological and chemical weapons treaties and laws that we have in the United States. When the CDC in April of 2003 filed the patent on SARS coronavirus isolated from humans, what did they do? They downloaded a sequence from China and filed a patent on it in the United States. Any of you familiar with biological and chemical weapons treaties knows that's a violation. That's a crime. That's not an innocent oops. That's a crime. And the United States Patent Office went as far as to reject that patent application on two occasions until the CDC decided to bribe the Patent Office to override the patent examiner to ultimately issue the patent in 2007 on SARS coronavirus. But let's not let that get away from us, because it turns out that the RT-PCR, which was the test that we allegedly were going to use to identify the risks associated with coronavirus, was actually identified as a bioterrorism threat by me in the European Union-sponsored events in 2002 and 2003, 20 years ago. That happened here in Brussels and across Europe. In 2005, this particular pathogen was specifically labeled as a bioterrorism and bioweapon platform technology. Described as such, that's not my terminology that I'm applying to it. It was actually described as a bioweapons platform technology in 2005. And from 2005 onwards, it was actually a biowarfare enabling agent, its official classification from 2005 forward. I don't know if that sounds like public health to you. Over $10 billion have been funneled through black operations through the check of Anthony Fauci and a side-by-side ledger where NIAID has a balance sheet, and next to it is a biodefense balance sheet, equivalent dollar-for-dollar matching that no one in the media talks about. And it's been going on since 2005. A biological weapons lab facility at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, received an exemption from the gain-of-function moratorium so that by 2016, we could publish the journal article that said, SARS coronavirus is poised for human emergence in 2016. And what, you might ask, Dave, was the coronavirus poised for human emergence? It was WIV1, Wuhan Institute of Virology, Virus 1.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the, go, you know the thing.
We will shut you down, we will cite you, and if we need to, we will arrest you, and we will take you to jail. period.
I wasn't thinking of the Bill of Rights when we did this.
But no amendment to the Constitution is absolute.
God actually spoke to me. He spoke about sacredness. He said to me, Kim, what I place in many, many people is sacred. And if anybody touches what is sacred to me, then it is the end for them. So what I've done in the United States of America is sacred. And there are people on every side that are trying to destroy what I deem sacred. And it's not going to happen.
This is the definition of criminal conspiracy, racketeering, and collusion. This is not a theory. This is evidence.
Because I have upheld this country to spread a light to the rest of the world. When you choose to go against the sacred thing that God puts into the very heart and the soil of this nation, this was sacred to God.
Now is the time to act.
This is exactly why I need some action from my people.
Well, Rochelle, you're a physician's assistant. You see actual patients on a daily basis that have actually put these COVID-19 shots in their bodies. And before we introduce today's guest, I want today's guest to know we just finished on part one of today's show playing clips and highlights from his presentation that I tried to break down into seven truth bombs. It was like 75 truth bombs, and I tried to cut it down into the biggest seven. But I've put all the supporting patents that were referenced in the presentation, as well as a link to the presentation, so people can really mine into it. And with that being said, Dr. David Martin, welcome on to the Thrive Time Show. How are you, sir?
Always good to see you guys. How are you?
Well, brother, I got to ask you this. What does everyone need to know about these patents, or what are we supposed to do with this information now that you've presented it so articulately and we know this? What do you want us to do? What do you want our listeners to do today, sir?
Well, listen, it's very, very simple. A lot of people have lived in the illusion that since the noise of the COVID craziness has kind of amped down, as we've seen public officials admit to lying about the vaccine safety and efficacy, as we've seen people admitting to the falsehoods of all of the forced lockdowns, coercions, face masking, and everything else, as we've seen this unfold, we have actually watched the citizens of this country become complacent once again. We are not going out in the streets. We are not doing a lot of action. And this is exactly the time that we should be taking action. This is the time where we should be doubling down on making sure elected officials, school boards, city representatives, county representatives, state officials, we need every one of them to be seeing these videos to continue the pressure on the attorneys general, to continue all the other pressures. Because Clay, if we do not take action, here's the thing. We are going to be lured into a sense of this thing's over, we're all good, and it's exactly at that moment that they'll strike again. We have to be keeping vigilant, and this is not a time for complacency.
Sir, I'm going to pull this up, some things that you referenced during your presentation, just to see if you could educate us. After all, you are an educator. So you referenced this patent here, US 7293272, methods for producing recombinant coronavirus. What does that mean? What is the profundity of this, sir?
Yeah, so here's the funny thing. And if you go down just a tiny bit more, just scroll down just a little bit. Let's go ahead and highlight the letters and the words on that first line that say infectious replication defective coronavirus. Now, what I have said all along is, and by the way, I am exhausted to the point of absolute fatigue around this whole is there or isn't there a virus. Let's get something abundantly clear. When people learn how to make pathogens from nature and from natural ingredients, what they do is they take what nature has built and they modify it. Infectious replication defective means we are going to take something that is naturally interacting with cells, and we are going to make that thing toxic to the cell. Very specifically, in the case of the patent that you just referenced, infectious replication defective means we are going to use a fragment of material from nature. We are going to corrupt that material fragment, and we are going to use it to carry a toxin into the cell. For the people who sit there going, yes, but Dave, does that mean you believe in viruses? Do you believe in this, that, the other thing? No, I don't. What I'm saying very clearly is we're taking material derived from nature. We are turning it against humanity, and we are getting it to target humanity and the infectious replication defective component. And remember, this research was done between 1999 and 2002. The patent filed in 2002 was to create a model which would allow tissue in the human body to respond and be infected by a pathogen and have that pathogen infect and harm the cell, but not propagate and transmit to other people.
Now, Dr. Martin, to my right here, this is Rochelle Voth, V-O-T-H. And in Tulsa, Oklahoma, every time I know somebody or someone reaches out to me and they say, do you have a doctor? Do you have a place I can go to where you can, you know, refer me to a doctor that doesn't think I'm crazy because I'm having side effects with the shot? I always refer them over to Meehan or the late, great Dr. Zelenko or Dr.
Yep. Bartlett.
Rochelle, briefly, are you seeing people every day that are coming in with issues related to the shots?
Yes, that's correct.
So you're not, what he's saying isn't insane.
No, not at all.
You're seeing it in the actual.
That's true.
Okay. So Dr. Martin, when we go to timetofreeamerica.com, I've tried to organize all the patents that you and Karen Kingston and Dr. Yep. Pinpenny and Dr. Zelenko have put out there. And I wanted to see again, if you could kind of hop into education mode, and please feel free to use sock puppets for my benefit so I can understand.
No worries.
There's patents now for vaccine nanotechnology. I first heard Dr. Zelenko talk about this, then Karen Kingston. Can you please explain what this means, these vaccines for nanotechnology patents? What's the significance of this information?
Yeah, so here's the thing. So nanotechnology is a broad term. And unfortunately, if you look at all of the, quote, vaccines with nanotechnology patents, there's over 1,300 of them, Clay. So it'll take a long time on your website to get them all listed. I do have them all listed, by the way. There, many of them are in the attachments to the Fauci dossier, which you know and you have shared with your viewers many yes. times. But what's important about these particular nanotechnology things is a couple things. First of all, the vast majority of these have something to do with carbon nanotubes or carbon nanoparticles. And what those things are ways in which we can attach toxic chemicals to very small particles that allow them to go through the cell membrane. That cell membrane may be explicitly at the cell lining itself, but some of these are also designed to make sure that they go through what's called the blood-brain barrier. And for those of you who have not had medical or physiological training, the blood-brain barrier is interesting because your brain, although you've been told it requires blood flow to keep alive and all this kind of thing, the vast majority of the cells inside of the neural network and apparatus of the brain rely on a transmission of oxygen and nutrients that's not direct next door to capillary beds. It has to go through a very complex perfusion matrix. And here's the thing. When we have things that get small enough to get into that blood-brain barrier interface, what happens is that if we have a small enough particle, that small particle can diffuse across the membrane and get where it doesn't belong. And the reason why that's particularly problematic in neurologic tissue, whether we're talking about the brain or the spinal cord, is while we have a vascular system that is really optimized to take impurities out of the blood and out of tissue in the rest of the body, the cerebrospinal fluid, the actual liquid matrix that surrounds the brain and the spinal cord, do not have the same cleaning mechanisms that the blood has. And so what happens is that a lot of things that are cleared naturally, whether it's in the liver, whether it's in the kidneys, whether it's in the gastrointestinal system, a lot of the things that are cleared naturally in the rest of the body cannot be cleared from the brain. And so what happens is stuff that gets across that membrane barrier has a nasty habit of staying there and proliferating.
No, sir, I'm not trying to paint you into a corner, although I don't think I could if I tried. That's why I would love to see you do a debate with Fauci, because they can't put you into a corner. There's a company called Surrey Nanosystems, and I've been looking into these carbon nanotubes, and I'm going, what? You know, it's like Surrey Nanotubes, just one particular company. Yep. They specialize in making these carbon nanotubes at temperatures compatible with, and I start to go, what would be the good purpose for these things? Like, why would somebody?
Okay, so yeah, great question. And I am so glad you have had the courage to ask this, because most people have been told, oh, it's nanoparticles, fear them, fear them, fear them. There are a lot of very good reasons why we use carbon nanotechnology. Most of it has to do with the conducting of current and electricity and other things in very small microelectronic devices. In fact, if we want to have, for example, solar cells operating at greater efficiency, if we want to have the conduction of electrical current inside of the semiconductor processes, there's a lot of times we'd like to use those things. And there's a lot of value in highly efficient energy transfer that can be done using carbon nanoparticles. There is a carbon nanoparticle, for example, that Intel uses that was derived from the burning of coffee beans in Vietnam. Not any old coffee beans, but coffee beans that had, when burned, a very springy nanotube that allowed for a flexible electrical circuit. We can imagine very good uses for those, and there are several. So when people say, oh, the technology is good or the technology is bad, that's a blunt instrument. But let me get very clear on something. Injecting anything, graphene, carbon nanotubes, any of those things, into a human being for the purpose of delivering a toxin is always bad. Not sometimes bad, always bad. And when these become part of the lipid nanoparticle system, when they become part of the vaccine system, when they become part of any injection, the human body is not designed to take in, to process, or to detoxify and clear carbon nanotubes. We don't have that. We don't have that in our kidneys. We don't have that in our liver. We don't have that in any of our blood and vascular system. And as such, injecting it into tissue is a horrifically bad idea. We do not know how bad because the tox studies aren't there.
Now, again, these are all new terms. Rochelle, when you went to medical school, did you study graphene oxide?
Not at all.
Did you study carbon nanotubes?
No, I was not aware.
So these are all, he mentions these. This is why I cannot stand listening to his podcasts. Mm-hmm. And then I listen to him five times. Because he'll do a 30-minute conversation on some show, mm-hmm. and it'll take the next 8 hours for me to look up everything he just
I know.
Out there. He does it.
You need a walking Wikipedia, Clay, to walk right next to me.
Seriously, it's mind-boggling. And so when he starts talking about graphene oxide, I just start looking it up, and I'm trying to find stuff. And I found this particular patent. It says, yep. Nano coronavirus recombinant vaccine taking graphene oxide as a carrier.
Yep.
Result of one of your interviews you did somewhere. And I just would love to – can you break down what this means?
Yeah, just once again, scroll down a little bit. And let me – since we're on this conversation anyhow – Clay, you know, you're controlling the mouse, but just go ahead and scroll down a little bit.
Okay.
And what you're going to see is right there, right in the description. Have a look at that and look at the technical field. So what you have is a bunch of things that if the person who's not familiar with patents isn't familiar with how to read them, what we need to do is we need to look at that beginning line and say, what is it this is about? This invention belongs to the field of nanomaterials and biomedicine, and it's for a vaccine development platform. Now, what specifically should we be reading about in this thing? What we should be reading about is the fact that right on the other column, over there where it said claims, a coronavirus vaccine, wherein the said vaccine, you know, coronavirus vaccine, comprises graphene oxide, carnosine, CPG, and a novel coronavirus receptor binding domain. Now, what does that mean? It's exactly what I just described before when we got into this conversation. What we're doing is in this particular case, we are taking graphene oxide and we're using it as a means by which we can pull a toxin. Anytime you see the word spike protein or novel receptor binding domain, that's a toxin. How do we get a small particle to pull a toxin into the cell or across the blood-brain barrier? And this is the problem. The problem is we have never taken the time to understand how the human body or how cells respond to foreign agents being exposed to these osmosis systems. Now, most people don't know what an osmosis system is, so let me make it a very, very simple example. You're familiar with a sponge in your kitchen.
Yep.
You can put the sponge into water, and the sponge just sucks up the water, right? Or a paper towel sucks up the water. But depending on what's in the stuff, the water or the soup that you spilled, some stuff sucks into the towel or the sponge, some stuff doesn't. Here's the problem. Our bodies were designed to have the primary interface be water, not other junk. Most of what your blood is water. Most of what circulates in your system is water. Most of what surrounds your cells is water. Our bodies were designed to deal with a water-based environment with fats, with proteins, and with very, very specific compounds. The minute you introduce a compound that doesn't belong, whether that is getting glyphosate in your food from eating Roundup sprayed crops, whether it is insecticides or pesticides, anytime we get a new piece of chemistry into the body that your body was never optimized to deal with, then what we have is both tissue damage, meaning we're harming the blood vessels and we're harming the lining of tissue, and we also are instituting cell damage where the cell itself becomes disrupted. So when you hear somebody like Dr. Sherry Tenpenny talk about what's going on in these post-vaccine injured patients, what's happening is they're having two forms of damage. They're having physical damage to the cell itself. The cell linings, the cells themselves are injured, and the chemistry inside the cell is being thrown off because these ultra-small particles, whether they're lipid nanoparticles, whether they're graphene oxide, whether they're nanoparticles, these small particles are essentially, think of them as plastic water bags fouling up the ocean.
Now, Rochelle, you see people on a daily basis, and they're having all sorts of issues. You worked at a big hospital. Correct. When did you first determine, oh, there's something wrong here?
You know, it's interesting because your story, you're talking about the neurological damage and the crossing of the blood-brain barrier. And the linchpin, the case that kind of threw it all into perspective for me was I had a lady who had what they call new-onset Alzheimer's dementia with aggressive rapid decline. And within a month, yeah, it was fully dysfunctional to the point that they even put a PEG tube in her because she couldn't feed herself. At the same time, she also had renal dysfunction. We couldn't figure out why. So within a two-month time frame, she was told, draw up your will. Her family was told because she was completely bedbound. She had no quality of life and she had no ability to think and have a capacity for herself. Oh. And
okay. So that's exactly what you just heard is exactly what I was saying, but now said through the voice of a person who's at the patient bedside. Let's unpack it again. Let's go in slow motion. Allegedly neurologic damage. It's not neurologic damage per se. The actual toxins are getting where they don't belong. They're getting into the brain. They're going through that blood-brain barrier and they're harming people's neurologic tissue. This woman did not have rapid onset Alzheimer's, just like people don't have rapid onset stage 4 cancer. She was toxically manipulated and that toxin actually harmed the cells. And then if you listen carefully, then she also had renal failure, but it wasn't really renal failure either. The cells of the kidney are designed to deal with sodium and potassium. They're designed to deal with fats. They're designed to deal with some lipids. They're designed to deal with some fragments of proteins that come out of, for example, when your blood vessels naturally dissolve and decay. Those are all natural things. But Clay, they are not designed to deal with polyethylene glycol. They're not designed to deal with graphene oxide. They're not designed to deal with these things. And when the kidney gets exposed to it, the kidney gets harmed.
And you're calling these nanotoxins.
They're toxins. They are actually manufactured. And listen, we know beyond just the toxins of the carrier vectors. So this is the lipid nanoparticles. This is the stuff that's in these shots. It's the graphene oxides. It's the nanoparticles. But in addition to that, we often jump past the fact that they're playing around with these nucleic acids, which are the building blocks of what we refer to as DNA or RNA. But those nucleic acids are, in many instances, not naturally occurring. They are industrially manufactured toxins. And what those do is those promote cancer, yeah, those promote tissue failure, those promote all sorts of horrific things. And what we're seeing increasingly is this bizarre phenomenon where people are getting rapid Alzheimer's, rapid stage 4 cancer, often in situations where the normal course of this disease happens across maybe months or years. We're seeing decay happen in weeks and days.
Dr. Martin, I'm going to try to weave in five questions in the final 10 minutes. So here we go. Rapid fire. I want to respect your time. Yeah. I want to ask you this. Bobby Kennedy Jr., the one thing that excites me about Bobby Kennedy Jr., although I will tell people, if presented with an option between Trump or Bobby Kennedy Jr., I would personally, me personally, I'm not saying you have to do this. I personally will be voting Trump. I want to be very clear on that. But as I listen to Bobby Kennedy Jr., I love that he's running because I feel like he cannot be controlled and he's calling out what's in the shots and he won't stop and he won't apologize for it. I absolutely love his take on the whole what's in the shots.